storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Brian Mary Deese. Welcome to another episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. Sorry for the noise, but we are nearing 216. Very important year. And I would be remiss if I didn't come back and speak with you. Family, I can't tell you that I'm going to be back every week putting out a new podcast. My goal is at least every other week. That's what I want to do. And truthfully, I think that's what I need to do. There's a lot going on in the world. And even though I'm just an ordinary person like all of you, I have a job that I don't particularly like. I know how that is. I got bills that I don't particularly like paying. I know how that is. And I have insights. I have opinions. We all have opinions, and some of us even have insights. We all have knowledge. And I thank you for allowing me to share some with you. 2016, ladies and gentlemen, will not be like any other year. Already, the end of 2015, the Fed is about to increase interest rates, which will impact not only investors, but it will impact everything from gas prices to food prices. Food prices, which are already too high during a period in time when the market, the quote market, we are the market. When there's a lot of food, there's too much food, which according to capitalist theory, food prices then should be going down. There is, of course, a budding organic movement, if you want to call it that, but people are finally paying attention to what they're eating. And they're saying, we want things that we know. And we want things that are all natural, which is something that the Europeans have already done. And I mean the real Europeans, the ones living in Europe. So that's moving. And so that's, of course, impacting food prices. There are weather phenomena in this country and elsewhere, which are killing crops, changing crop yields, which, of course, are causing some prices to go up, some to go down. But ultimately, we are still paying too much for food. And why? Subsidies. Subsidies. And when I say subsidies, I'm not talking about government. I'm talking about the way that the system is structured. Corporations pay less to put chemicals in your food than to actually give you natural foods. Put that into your mind. Something which is almost wholly and entirely chemicals costs less than something that is natural. This is not a firebrand concept. This is a reality. With interest rates going up, this is going to, we're going to see commodities go up. Because now investors are going to be making less money, or excuse me, they're going to be able to borrow less money. They're going to be able to take less risk, meaning they're going to be in a position of making less money. And so now they're going to have to make up for what they want to make by passing it on to you. Now, may I let you know, ladies and gentlemen, that they're already gouging you. All of these high prices, it's not because food is actually more expensive. No. Companies have been cutting costs for years in order to make more and more money. But the interesting point on that is this. The companies aren't the companies anymore. Most of these companies, most of these food companies, these big food companies, which are starting to be kind of overshadowed by smaller companies, most of them are owned by investment firms, hedge funds and such, who all they care about doing is making money. It shocked me. Shocked me when I learned this. Now, I'm going to do something that most people are going to frown upon, but frankly, I don't care because this is where the information first came to me. Go to Wikipedia and type in hedge funds or investment firms and read those articles and then click on the links to some of the firms and the businesses which they list, and then check out the holdings of those big businesses. I was reading in the Wall Street Journal the other day. One hedge fund, and they were not embarrassed to say this, one hedge fund controlled 4.25 trillion in assets. Controlled it. 4.25 trillion in assets. To give you an idea of how much that is, the American economy, our GDP each year, is roughly $18 trillion. To give you an even more, a bigger concept, should I say, of how much that actually is. And how insane it is. I once read an article where if we were to take all of the infrastructure investments, or not investments, but the infrastructure in America, and we were to tally the cost of what it actually was worth, it'd land roughly somewhere around $60 to $70 trillion. We haven't done much, this country, should I say, have not done much upgrading. So our infrastructure is dramatically less expensive than, ironically, like China or some of the other quickly, rapidly modernizing countries. $60, $70 trillion. Let's take the higher end. Let's say $70 trillion. That means this fund individually controls nearly 2% of all of the infrastructure worth of our of this country, of our country. I'm trying not to personalize this, but they control that much. And there was another company that was mentioned in the article, and they controlled, they just controlled $116 billion with a B, a billion dollars worth of assets. This is important, ladies and gentlemen. Why? Because as we go through what looks like we're going to be going through, unfortunately, the gulf is going to get wider. And the tension is going to get even worse. The reason why I said this is a 2016 outlook, ladies and gentlemen, is because already we are seeing signs that 2016 is going to be a heck of a year. What do I mean? The Wall Street Journal and Seeking Alpha. First hinted me to something going on a couple of months ago when they said, junk markets are sliding. Junk bond markets and pricing are sliding. And I was reading through the articles and the individuals who were making their commentaries were saying, we're concerned because for 10 or so months, junk bonds have been sliding. Now, junk bonds, you gotta look them up. Don't just listen to what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen, and not do the work. Look up what a junk bond is and understand what it is. This is very simple. It's not going to take you 20 minutes to actually wrap your head around it. You're going to read it. It's going to take you 5 minutes, and you're going to say, oh, okay, I get what he's talking about now. Go and look up junk bonds. Pause this. Go and look it up. It'll help you out, and it'll help me out. But they're sliding. Prices are sliding, and in some ways, they're actually cratering. And I was reading an additional article from Seeking Alpha, where the individual pointed out specifically, said, look, usually junk bonds and the market, Dow Jones, Wall Street, all that, they actually follow a trajectory that is very similar. It's like the stripes on the middle of a road. They follow each other perfectly. And you can always tell where the stock market is going by looking at junk bonds. It is nearly never an occurrence where the junk bond does something and then recorrects itself or corrects itself to match whatever the stock market is doing. It is usually always, and I don't believe they list it, a example when this was not the case, it is usually always the case that the stock market adjusts itself to where the bond market is. The bond market in the past year has lost 10% of its value. The junk bond market, let me be specific, the junk bond market, which is important because people make a lot of money through junk bonds. Higher risk, they make a lot more money. Well, that has slipped 10%. And everybody who's looking at it says, that's not the bottom. That's not the bottom. Wall Street has yet to correct itself. The stock market has not corrected itself to meet that yet. What could this mean? The last time there was this big of a dip was, guess when? 2008. And we remember what happened in 2008. But here's what is amazing, and most people don't realize this. Those things which unfolded in 2008, there were predictors in 2006 and 2007. There were predictors. And one of the predictors was the junk bond market slipped the year before. The housing market started slipping in 2016, actually in 2005, especially in black neighborhoods. And then we've seen what happened in 2008. Put the feet of the president-to-be to the fire and tied everything that he was going to do to bailing out those who caused the most damage. It appears that we're entering a similar fate this year. It appears we are entering a similar fate this year. It is impossible for me to express what I feel when I think about this. Because as As I am reading through many of these articles, which some of them have nothing to do with stock markets, but they all have to do with the economy. I'm hearing and I'm reading articles about stress tests for banks and banks failing stress tests. I'm reading articles about Fed members being worried that banks will not survive another 2008 style crash. I'm reading articles that say Wall Street is engaging in the same nonsense it was engaging in 2008. I'm reading all of this, and I'm reading about income inequality, which is soaring. I'm reading about healthcare mergers and higher costs of healthcare, where pills are coming on to the, quote, market marked up to $50 on the low end. And in one case, one of these psychopathic individuals marked a pill up, I forgot what it was for, $9,000 a pill. Not joking, ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. This was actually in the Wall Street Journal. $9,000 a pill. This all concerns me. Because as we move towards electing Hillary Clinton or Donald J. Trump, I won't tell you what I think the J stands for. But as we do this, I've realized austerity and oppression is going to be the job of the next president. Barack Obama set the stage for this. And the next president has to be ruthless and absolutely spineless to let the fascists, excuse me, the Wall Street individuals who are electing them, run roughshod over this country. I find myself being concerned that war with Russia and China sometime in the next decade will be almost inevitable. I was listening to I think it was Gary Knowles' podcast, Progressive Commentary Hour, and the individual who he was interviewing, an older female, I think, professor emeritus, as they say, she said something which absolutely stunned me. She said she believes that the United States, from what she has read, she's a really good national security researcher, apparently. She said she believes that the United States is setting itself up for a confrontation with Russia, which is easy to see. You look at the bases which are set up around Russia, you can definitely see that there's probably going to be a confrontation. And that from what she can gather, it is possible that the United States wants to see Russia broken up. And I thought about it. When I heard that, I thought about what that could actually mean. What would it technically mean to go to war with Russia? What would it mean? I mean, let's be honest, ladies and gentlemen. The United States still has a draft. They just haven't used it. Oh, whoa. You didn't just hear what I told you, did you? You just dismissed me outright. Oh, we don't have a draft. Really? The United States hasn't been in an actual declared war in how many years? They didn't declare war on Iraq. They didn't declare war on Afghanistan. They aren't declaring war on ISIS, technically. They didn't even technically declare war on Vietnam, and look at how many people died there. If memory serves me, the United States hasn't actually declared war since maybe Korea, and possibly not even then. You might have actually had to go back to World War II. The United States still has a draft. They just haven't used it. When you turn 18, what do? You go and you register for that draft. There is still a draft. They just have not used it. It is a concern that the president who gets into office, and both of the leading candidates right now, are hawkish. There's a concern that they will seek war for war's sake. Why? Because look at the country. You either have to fix the problems in the country or do something so diabolical to get people to come together and unite. That is unfathomable. And I think we're at that moment where something like war with Russia to try to prove how big and scary and sound the United States is could be what they use. But I'm getting ahead of myself. It's impossible for me to actually say what should we expect in 2016 when it comes to interpersonal relationships. Are there going to be issues with race? Yes. 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 Historically, whenever things got bad economically, white people went crazy. They did. And they had no problem lynching a bunch of people, burning down a bunch of things. Of course, they didn't call them race riots back then. At least they tried not to. Sometimes they did. There are going to be problems with race. There are going to be problems with the police who are not there to help people, but are there to maintain control. When they talk about peace, it's control. There are going to be issues with families and schools and education and children, and the society is ripping apart at its seams. There are some places where it's already ripped apart. I remember Dmitry Orlov, I think is actually how you say his name, was saying, he's from Russia, he watched the collapse of the Soviet Union, and he already said the United States has went past what he calls a social collapse. Social collapse has already been achieved. And I'll be honest, ladies and gentlemen, I can see it. Most of the issues that you see today in your community is because there is no social contract anymore. None. And when I say social contract, I'm talking about person to person. There is very little interpersonal communication anymore. And I'm guilty of it just as you are. You may want to say, no, I'm not guilty of it. I have friends. I have this. I have that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. The town that I grew up in, there was, at the elementary school, there was this amazing wooden playground. Complete wooden playground. And upon asking about it, when I was old enough to appreciate it, and I was still a kid when that occurred, I asked, how did this playground get here? And I was told, the people in the community actually came together and built the thing. Now, when I say a playground, Don't think, oh, well, a couple of slaves, funny, a couple of swings, a slide, and, you know, maybe a couple of things, monkey bars or something. No. No. This was actually much more intricate. There were steps and places to move from here to there. There were, you can climb under things, and it, if I can find a picture of it, I'll post it, but it was amazing. And in later years, I actually was working at the local community center, and they had found all of these old pictures of the area where the playground was built prior to the playground being there, and all these pictures of the people actually coming together and building the playground. When I talk about interpersonal, ladies and gentlemen, this is what I'm talking about. We don't do these things anymore. We do not identify ourselves, our I-selves, as part of a collective. In fact, when somebody suggests that, we look at them cross-eyed. Or we have gotten into the habit of saying anything that is socialistic or communal is wrong. And when I say socialistic, I ain't talking about ideological now. I'm talking about social. One of my favorite books, audiobooks from LibriVox, They Call Me Carpenter. And there's a section in there where the narrator actually asks, how is it that all of the fundamental brotherhood values, all the things that bind us together, have come to be seen as negative and wretching? Think about that. Think about how many of you, when somebody says socialist, you become sick inside and say, oh my God, you're trying to kill America. Or when someone says communist, you immediately say, oh, you're trying to bring death to America. Or somebody says anything that is communal, you say the same thing. And don't lie about it. Don't lie about it. Society has died because people don't want to believe that a society is not individual. Everybody talks about the island, the island, the island, the island. If you were on an island, then you would have to do this and that and that and this. You know something? The people who propagate that don't even believe that nonsense. You know how I know? Because if they believed it, there wouldn't be such things as fraternities, which are usually heretical. There wouldn't be such things as secret societies, which are usually heretical. You can't have heretical lineages on an island. You have one person on an island, they're going to die, and that's the end of their heritage. Goodbye. See you later. It's only when you start having families of people. And mind you, I said families as in plural. That you start being able to craft structure. And this brings me now to the good news. Because it isn't all bad. 2016 begins the countdown to what is likely going to be a major transformation. The 2020s. There is something bubbling underneath everything that you see, all the negativity. People want change. That's why they voted for Barack Obama, because he put change and hope up. And people wanted change. And it wasn't just about Bush. At the beginning of the year 2000, actually before the year 2000, there were polls being taken about the likely political disposition of the people who are going to be voting during the next few election cycles. People who are young, People who are going to have to worry about raising families in the next, or starting families in the next 10 to 15 years. Individuals who are going to shape the political and social and economic future of the country. Back in the late 90s, 98, 99, they were taking these polls, a lot of polls, trying to figure this information out. And here's what they found. Despite everything they had done to knock, not even progressive ideas, I'm talking about straight up socialistic ideas, universal health care, a shorter work week, higher taxes for the wealthy, no matter what, how much they had tried over the last 30 years to slam all of this, people weren't having it. The young people, I don't care if you were talking about the Midwest to the Bible Belt to the North, young people, guess what they were saying in droves? They were saying, we want all these things. We believe the rich should pay higher taxes. We believe that there should be universal government-sponsored health care. Maybe it be regional. But we believe that it should actually be, healthcare should be a free right to everybody. We believe that people should be able to go to school and college for free. This is what they knew. I found a clip. Don't know what happened to it, actually. We were looking for it the other day. From 2000. And this individual, a conservative, was talking about this. And he was shocked. Look up Mr. Paul Ryan, who is now the Speaker of the House, and look up this man in House of Representatives when he first came in. I think it was either 2002, 2001, and listen to him speak. Actually, it had to be 2001, 2000, because it was prior to 9/11. The man came in sounding like a Teddy Roosevelt Republican. He came in sounding like a Teddy Roosevelt Republican. He was not the person who he is now. So they knew this. They knew this. And they knew that despite Al Gore's conservative credentials prior to 1992, and even 1990, he was supposed to be a bigger conservative than Bill Clinton. He was a bigger conservative, even in some aspects, than George H. Bush. George won. Despite this, they knew that Al Gore had started turning soft. And that's the only way to say it. That conservatism was being squeezed out of him. And so they placed George Bush in office because they didn't believe Al Gore was going to get the job done. And it is my belief that they have set things up to counter what they saw as an incredible lurch to the left. And people do not think about this. People do not talk about this. That they had deliberately moved the country to the right to stop the country from going to the left, because they knew it was going to happen. And they did. They had the polling numbers to prove it. Well, now, they lurched it to the right. But the country naturally wants to be going to the left, because that is the actual universal trajectory of this planet. It is supposed to be going towards more humanitarian futures. And we're not currently, because of the sycophants who you have allowed. And there are a certain group of people who I'm talking to who they have allowed to take root. So what do we do? Well, like I said, there's things happening underneath everything that are going, that's starting to show flowering. I listened to Economic Update with Richard Wolff, And he just announced a couple of weeks ago that his show had partnered with a law firm to help businesses convert to cooperatives. That's something that is definitely going to be playing a bigger and bigger role over the next 10 years. And I'd even say over the next 5 years. I think by the end of this next president's first term in office, you're going to see a huge thriving. No, wrong. Wrong word. If you look up what thriving means, you'd stop using it. So flourishing cooperative movement. You also have the gift economy movement, which is also picking up steam. People instinctively know that something is needed that is greater than what we have right now. We need to now answer that. And it's not going to be asking the powers that won't to do something, because they're committed to death. And they're going to drag you down that sorry road of death if you are not willing to say, I ain't going. Is a year of saying, I ain't going, because they about to give you something. They about to give you something. And I don't know if it's going to be a terrorist attack. I don't know if it's going to be an economic crash that is just absolutely deplorable. I don't know. But I know this. If I was all of you, I'd get ready for next fall. They don't call it the fall for nothing. Be ready for that autumn. We've seen this playbook before. Don't let it catch you off guard. Start reading articles that you think want to put you to sleep. Start understanding the economy. Start seeing the signs. Why? Those are going to be the ones who are ready. I want to thank you all for joining me. I'm glad that we had this time together. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can write to me, classwarbattlefield@live.com. I'm looking for ideas for episodes. I expect to be publishing some speeches in the coming year. I do have one that I published a year ago, but it would not upload. I'm thinking I'll retry now to actually get it up there and... Thank you all. Peace, love, and happiness.
Bite your lip and take the trip. Though there may be wet road ahead and you cannot slip, just move on. There's only one kind, so hush not, child, and don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Move on up and keep on wishing. Remember your dream is your only scheme, so keep on pushing. Take nothing less than the supreme best. Do not obey, rumors people say, but you can pass the test. Just move on up to a greater day. With just a little faith, if you put your mind to it, you can surely do it. Just move on!